Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Holly, and we are here today with Sean from the O'Reillys and the Patty Hats, and he's going to be talking to us today about a lot of stuff. His band's been around for a number of years, and he's garnered quite a few views on YouTube and stuff like that, so we thought we'd have him on and kind of see if we can get some information from him on how he did it. So to start off, first of all, let's just say thank you for joining us. We really appreciate having you.
Hello, glad to be here and looking forward to your questions.
Cool. So the very first thing we always get guests to do is to kind of go over a little nutshell history of who you are, what you do, that kind of a thing.
As a band, you mean? Yeah. You know, we originally formed a duo and called ourselves the O'Reillys because we went to a German island and we went there on vacation and had the idea of forming an Irish folk band. And, you know, being a duo was the easiest way to start off. And so as I, Sean, and my brother, Dwight O'Reilly, who isn't really my brother, had a good understanding of what we wanted to do, like what kind of music we wanted to do, we started off as a duo. And from that moment on, we had a few gigs, a few songs. We've recorded our first album. It was at that time we were around 18, and we went to school. You know, it was really easy and just like a hobby more or less. We earned our first money by playing in a pub, and you know that money was a lot for us because we were in school. And I remember we had the bills after the pub gig. We had the bills on the table and thought, man, that is so much in if you count it in beer. And so we really were happy. We did what we loved and earned a little money from it, so that was fine. And afterwards, we got the idea of why not search for people to make the band bigger, because we wanted to have some rock influences in it, some more punch in it, drums, for example, and we wanted to be on bigger stages. And when you think of festivals, you don't see a lot of solo artists, and if they are solo artists, they often have a band with them and make it more punch, have more sound. And yeah, we then started forming a bigger band and searching for people around the place to have rock influences in it. And it really from that time on, it went really well, because we find the right people. We found the right people, and the Irish folk punk is a niche, and that's why we got booked a lot. And yeah, from that time on, we could say we were the O'Reillys and the Patty Hats, the bigger band. Yeah, and now we play not really for a living, but we have it not more like a hobby. It's semi-professional. It's professional, but we all have different jobs and we work normally, yeah.
Fair. Now, I know I'm kind of leaping a little bit ahead in the questions, sort of, but Holly, bear with me. But the thing I've been trying to comprehend is why Irish music when you're German? I'm just not grasping that fact. Like, I always thought you guys were German Irish until I kind of started reading your bio, and then I went, wait a minute. They're not Irish. So what kind of got you guys into doing that? I'm trying to understand.
Well, I take that as a compliment, because being disposed as German would be bad for a band playing Irish music. So I like when when people say that. And the why is really easy because on that vacation I told you about on this German island, I listened first to Irish music on an MP3 player, you know, those old things where music was on. And it was, I remember it was like a 128 megabyte MP3 player with Irish music on it. I listened to it because, my friend Dwight O'Reilly, he said, just listen to it, it's great. And yeah, it was the first time I got infected with this kind of music. And then we went to an Irish pub, and everybody knows Irish pubs. The feeling there, the furniture, you know those Chesterfield furniture, couches, and the dark interior and everything. And that fits so perfectly well for our understanding of, good culture, music, art, that we fell in love with the Irish culture as Germans. So we just, couldn't do anything else than this music. And so it's a simple form of finding the right thing. And that's why we as Germans play Irish music. So, I'm not sure if the same thing works for Irish people playing German music. I don't think so, because Irish culture itself is an exporting hit, because everywhere in the world, Irish people, Irish music, Irish pubs are loved, and they emigrated a lot. So it's all over the world, and people like those mystic sounds, those stories. And yeah, so in the end, we fell in love with the music, and we're sorry with Germans.
I got one more follow-up question before Holly gets onto hers. I'm sorry, but do you think that what you do could work with a different type of culture? Like, Germans playing, being Americans, or I don't know, something. Do you think it could work with anything but Irish, or what?
I don't know. You mean if we would play Chinese music?
Southern style rock or something. I guess some Germans do. I guess they do.
Yeah, of course. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, country music. Okay, I guess it could work. But do you think it could do it? Like, do you think most people could pull it off, though, with different countries, or what?
Yeah, of course. I think so. If you love what you do. And in the end, Irish music itself was a mixture of different cultures as well, because the Irish got the banjo not from the Irish, but from the American people. And so it's a mixture itself. And, it's the same with language. I think music is a language, and language, all the fights in society about, should we use that word? Shouldn't we? We can't use that word anymore. And youth language, people, children, kids in school invent new words, and the language changes. And, of course, it has the type, the poster on it. This is Irish music. This is the form. But, it changes constantly. And if you love what you do, you could pull off playing Chinese music as a French person as well, I think.
Hilarious. Okay, I think I'm done with my follow-ups. I'll let Holly do hers now.
Okay, good. I'm going to skip ahead slightly because I think it's a bit more relevant. But I'd love to know, how did you end up at Wacken?
Well, that was a series of coincidences, I guess, because... As you told me, this is some insight into the industry. I would say the most important thing is network, as to know people, and how you end up knowing people. Well, I can't tell you that, because we in our case we started a crowdfunding, and we wanted to finance our first real album. And therefore, we needed some extra money, because we had like around 6,000 or 8,000 euro to that time. And we needed some extra money to finance all the production costs. And then we found somebody who gave us some money in advance, like a credit, to produce those things. And those people had connections to the industry. And we really fast got someone who is a publisher, and that publisher has a lot of, you know, connections to festivals. And then, you know, step by step, you get your CD to a promoter who wouldn't get your CD if he wouldn't be friends with the publisher, and so on. And that worked, you know, step by step, leading to us being on Wacken. And in the end, you can have good network, but if you are shitty, I guess, in I don't know, in communication or in your in what you play and your music and your quality, I think it wouldn't work. So many things came together here, I guess.
Yeah, I guess as well, it's important, isn't it, to put yourself out there in the first place, because people are never going to find you if you don't sort of advertise yourself a little bit and put some of the groundwork in.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, lots of passion, I think, is the best thing to you know, expose yourself and get yourself out there in the world and tell people about it and get to know the right people. Yeah.
So, kind of on the walking question, did that kind of help you get more fans or sales, do you think, or did it not really make a dent in the grand scheme of things?
No, definitely. So we, in the end, we often talk, you know, in the band, we often talk about what was useful, what wasn't. And we often, you know, think about the past 10 years, what was worth it and what brought the most people in our own club venues. Because in the end, you know, promoters see your club shows, your very own club shows that you play as headliner. And if they see, okay, in this country, for example, Germany, they have 12 club shows in summer or in autumn, better to say, and they bring 500 people to every concert. You know, tells them very fast, man, they will bring 500 people to my festival. Man, they had a fee of $20, for example. So I can, check out how much I should pay them, how much will I earn as promoter. And that is it's an important number, how many people come to your concerts. And that's why we talk about that a lot. And we ask the people on our concerts at the merchandise table, we ask them, hey, man, where do you know us from? And people always tell three things. And the one is YouTube, from your videos. I saw it. I just got recommended your video, Barrels of Whiskey, or another one. They say from your support tour, because we had some support tours, bigger support tours. And the third one is I saw you on Wacken. And so those three things really, really helped us to get a couple of hundred people to every show, at least in Germany.
Interesting. Okay. And then the final thing I just wanted to ask you just about that walk-in type thing. How did that turn into for direct sales from the show? Did it did you guys get a lot of sales directly from the show or no?
On the festival itself?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the problem with the big festivals is that they have strong rules. So you have to give the festival some pieces of your merchandising and they will sell it in their truck. Because if you're like Rammstein or so, you bring your own truck to the festival, obviously, and they sell all their stuff. But we had to give them a shirt. And I don't know if CDs are allowed. But in the end, those big festivals, we don't sell a lot of merchandising. We could if we could directly sell it on the place, but they don't do it. You know, it's not their usual thing. So I don't know if we could, how many CDs we would have sold there.
I'm good, Holly. Over to you.
Are you sure? Okay. And then it's quite interesting, actually. I hadn't realized the festivals work like that with the merchandise.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's on every festival, but you know, on most festivals, I remember us carrying a little box because normally we have big cases with merchandise, and on those festivals we carry a little box across the field and bring them, you know, 10 shirts or so not a lot, and afterwards we bring H-Hertz back, because you know, it's just like a big a big box, a big supermarket of merchandising, so you don't get always the fans to see your stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, you mentioned a bit that your videos get a lot of views and a lot of people find you through those. What do you think it is that helps your videos do so well on YouTube?
Well, we asked ourselves that question a lot, because if we would have the recipe for that kind of success, it would be great. It's somehow a little with the same thing, a little with you know, writing in a hit, like a real song hit. You have some things you can do right, which is of course quality, I think. If your song has a certain quality and your videos have a certain quality, that helps. But I see so many videos and listen to so many songs having a huge quality, perfectly produced, and they don't get a lot of views or you know, listeners. And the other thing is, I guess, it's luck. It's being lucky, because I remember we thought if we would hit 100,000 views with Barrels of Whiskey, we would have, you know, celebrated this as the biggest success in history for us. And I know that it was to that time more interesting than today, I think, because algorithms change. But to that time, it was 2016, I guess, we had Barrels of Whiskey on for like half a year, and it was okay, doing okay. It was one of our first videos, or it was the first video. And afterwards, we uploaded Black Sails and Fair Old Lady, which we did in our rehearsal studio, really shitty somehow, and really on a fast track. But uploading those two videos after Barrels of Whiskey, after half a year of having it on, that brought the views up insanely. I think YouTube put our video into recommendations. Why ever, I don't know. And do you know the band The Dead South? It's like a Canadian. They have a Canadian redneckish sounding band, and they have a video on. It's 180 million views or so. And they went to the same time. This song went really big, bigger than Barrels of Whiskey, obviously, but it was to the same time. And those videos got recommended, you know, to each other. And I don't know what happened there, because I would love to pull it off again. And we only did it once with Irish Way, because Irish Way we produced, I don't know, 1 or 2 years later. And that worked insanely well too. And afterwards, all the other videos obviously had lots of, profited from that success, but it wasn't the same, you know, the same impact. And I don't know, in the end, I think people like to have a label on something, because those videos that are really like cliche Irish folk punk, cliche Irish folk rock, that worked really well, because Irish Way itself, you know, we hoped that everybody would understand this video as a you know, a humorous way of working with that cliche. Many people did, many people didn't. And Barrels of Whiskey, I mean, come on, it's Barrels of Whiskey, so the name has the Irishness in it. The whole video has this you know, I would say European old ancient flavor. And because if I look into the insights of YouTube, I see half of the people clicking Barrels of Whiskey are American, half of them are German, and you know, 30% are like the rest of the world. But I think maybe it's an American thing too, to see this European style. And because I don't know, maybe it's because of this ancient history, old buildings, this, you know, magic, this Harry Potter style, you know.
I have a really dumb question, and forgive me if you don't like this question, but it just popped into my head. But have you ever had anybody like get offended because you guys are doing Irish songs and you're German?
Yes, of course. You know, yes. No, it's not a dumb question, because we really have some people, but only in the internet. So I've never experienced, experienced a person telling us to stop like making this kind of music, because we're not, Irish from nationality.
Yeah.
And here and there you see people saying like plastic patties, which is like, I don't know if this expression is like, it's like well-known. Plastic patties is this like, if you on St. Patrick Day, you know, dress as a leprechaun and, you know, run around, be, you know, pretending to be Irish, this is like the plastic patty thing. And, you know, our name, the O'Reillys and the Patty Hats, and we dressed, of course, we dress, it's not like dressing up with costumes. It's what we wear as people, but of course it fits into that style. And it was never a real problem for us, I guess, because how would we change to be Irish? You know, we could take the nationality, but we would still be Germans. And, you know, I don't think that this is a real problem, because it's still show business and it still is making this kind of music from our hearts. And that's you know, that's for me the points where I see, where I don't see a problem anywhere. And the Irish themselves are separated, I guess. Most of them are welcoming this kind of music, and some of course have a problem with it, but you see it in the world. There are lots of things you can be divided by, and this is just how it works in the world. You have to fight some fights, and the topic is really not important, I guess.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it's show business, like you said. So, I mean, I get it 100%. And then I think the last question I wanted to ask on that end of things right there is just kind of like, what about the... So one of the things with Irish bands is they get into like drinking and stuff a lot. So how do you feel about having that as a theme? Is that negative? Do you think, like, you know what I mean? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Just out of curiosity, because I could go either way on that one.
You know, drinking as, you know, being part of being in an Irish band.
Yeah.
You know, we are a seven piece band, and those seven people are really different from each other. And we have our Ian McFlanagan, the one who is like our, I want to say the entertainer guy of the band, and he really lives that stuff. And he has a like an old Volkswagen bus, like a Bully, and if you open that door, you know, directly cans of beers roll out of that door. And it's really, it's no cliche. It's real. And he drinks so much on every concert. So for him, it's real. And for us people, we of course, we have our casual drink and we like to have Guinness, not because of the cliche, but we love Guinness as a drink. And of course on rock concerts, but that counts for every rock band. You have the fridge is full of beers in every club, and the bigger you get, the more drinks you get, and you can, you know, choose your drinks in every venue. You say, okay, I want to have a gin, and at least you get a gin, not maybe not the best one, but you get your drinks. And that leads to us drinking a little more, of course. But I spoke of quality in the beginning, and that's another thing. We never drank so much that we couldn't perform well. Of course, afterwards, there were some times we would have not performed. We shouldn't have performed in that moment. But normally we are really, you know, sane when we go on stage.
Fair. No, just a question I was wondering. So Paul, over to you.
Well, I guess that leads quite nicely into the do you have any tips for going on tour or performing question?
Well, I think there are different types of bands. I think there are types of bands that are really like artsy and live for art and, you know, smoke a little, drink a little, and, you know, don't see time as a factor. And there are other bands that are more like organized and strategic and technical and so. And there are bands that are a little bit in between, I guess. And I think you should get your stuff right. You should get your equipment right. There are so many times when we went on stage and some technical problems made the whole, you know, ambience, shitty and broke, and you get out of your comfort zone. So get your technical stuff right, get your equipment right, you know, be careful with it, get yourself some cases and maybe some people that help you, because we have really from the beginning, we got some crew members who were joining the band because they like what we do and because we were friends, and they helped us by carrying stuff around, being on stage and shooting some pyrotechnics, and you know, waving some flags, and so they were part of the show. They helped behind the stage and still do, and that helped for us to be really fast recognized as professionals, because the promoter sees what's behind the stage. And when you come to the concert, you have your stuff ordered, you have your timetable right, and you still perform with heart and have a good chat with everybody. I think that's really helpful to be on tour. Yeah.
Cool. So I think we're almost out of questions, and we only got a few minutes left anyways. Holly, do you have anything else you want to ask them? I have a couple more questions myself.
You go ahead then. Yeah.
Cool. Super quick, because we've got about 5 minutes, so not as long answers this time, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Now you kind of touched on this briefly a while back, but just to reiterate, can you kind of go over the importance of networking and being friendly with people versus having like the entitled attitude that some bands have?
Well, I think being kind to each other is a general good choice of being in society. And yes, I think if you have a promoter who's an ass, and if you have problematic people around you, I think you shouldn't kiss their asses and should be, you know, too friendly with them, because oftentimes we experienced problems with not being paid or not finding the right technical things on stage. You know, there are so many things that could go wrong, and you see if the promoter is working well, and you see if he's not. And I think being friendly to those people as well is of course important, but stand your ground and say tell them what was wrong. And you know, if you have to, we did not do that, I think, but if you have to, I think you should you know, let them pay for what you missed and what they, you know, because they often they don't do things because they don't have to pay them for like a box or like a PA or anything. And you know, put that in a contract and follow that contract, and that is still being nice, I guess. You can be friendly and you can have a contract which helps you to, you know, because oftentimes they say bands don't have contracts, they are too much into their art, né? So
I get it. It's like you got to kind of go between, you have to be friendly but not let yourself be a doormat.
Yeah like, exactly.
Cool. Okay, I think that's all I have for questions. And Holly already said she's good. Sean, do you have anything else that you think we should have discussed that we haven't brought up?
No, I guess. I think it's not too important to chase for a label, for a publisher, for a promoter. I think it's most important because today you can get yourself and your stuff out very easily. So put your passion into your work, and I think you will be found. And if it is just another band helping you because they like your stuff, so just get your passion out there.
Cool. Okay, so with that, Sean, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And with that, we are done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.